anyway when you've got obscenities written on them? And remember, obviously the child can't read, the child can't pick out their clothes. There are certain obligations, certain responsibilities that you and I as parents have, and you can't dress your child in such a way that they're emblazoned with obscenities. It just strikes me as irresponsible. All right, 1-800-345-KNEW, 1-800-345-5639. John is in Crockett. Hey, John, welcome to Talk 910. KNEW.
Not necessarily true, because if that were the case, it'd probably be more about beer and stuff like that.
Well, there are plenty of those out there. I've seen the little Budweiser onesies. That's
another. Oh, really?
Yeah. Or maybe I'm not shopping in the right areas, but I suppose you could, in addition to the Budweiser ones, you could probably find one for like Mad Dog 2020 on somebody's onesie, or malt liquor one on a diaper. You know, you got them all out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I just want to say that, it sounds like definitely it's geared toward my generation, because it sounds like my generation is kind of falling a little behind.
Yeah, your generation's a little screwed up, if you don't mind me saying, Anthony. You gotta.
I say it myself.
You got to get to work fixing that generation. Hey, Anthony, I appreciate the call to Talk 910, KNEW. There you go. 21-year-old guy understands it. That's great. I think that's great. I'm thrilled, by the way, every day coming here. They're wonderful people who are part of the program, and you listen to the wide variety of ages. You know, we got so many.
Shut the hell up, fool. This junk is what you have to say? While the world is on fire, this is what you have to commentate about on your little right-wing talk show. What kind of t-shirts parents are putting on their little kids? Not about the death and destruction that's going on in Iraq. Not about the death and destruction that's going on, by the natural disaster. Nothing about global capital politics. Nothing about Sam's attempt to overthrow governments. And then you babble on to this one dude about your generation is falling behind. Our generation is falling behind. It's your generation blowing up the world, destroying the environment. Your government are quick to spend money on killing each other and controlling the populations, but turn into little Grinches on helping each other out, like in Southeast Asia over the whole tsunami issue. It's so much for Islamic solidarity amongst Muslims, because Muslim brothers are dying in Indonesia. Do you know what time it is? The real Sister Brotherhood slave time. Check it out. You're listening to 104.1, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUBER.com, The World, RadioForAll.net, The Universe, Slave Revolt Time. Tonight we're going to shoot our way right into a Ventures in Corporate Media Land segment, as we're going to take a step back in recent time, a few months back, and see what the corporate media was saying about its ongoing war, and how there was sunlight on the horizon. And then we'll deal with the whole New Year's resolution. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave Revolt.
How many of you really believe that the media tells you the truth? The media. The media. The media. How many of you really believe that the media tells you the truth?
They lie.
For a small planet.
You know what time it is. Ventures in Corporate Media Land. And tonight, what we're going to deal with to start off is what a difference a year makes. You know, as 2004 comes to a close, let's take a glance back at how the corporate media was covering issues concerning Iraq. You know, Lou Dobbs, he's on CNN. He had a couple of people on from the American Enterprise and, you know, things of that particular nature. And he asked one of them as he opened up his show about what the road Sam was on and how they felt things were headed. So let's see how they respond to this as this conversation took place a little while ago, and then we'll take it from there. Check it out.
Washington, D.C., let me begin, if I may, with you, Danielle. With all of the violence, we heard the ex-administrator of the CPA, Paul Bremer, say that he wishes that more could have been done to bring about security. Why do you feel that it has been successful?
I think it's, the word success is probably the wrong one to use. I think we're on the road to success. I think we've made progress, and there are going to be times when we're going to take one step forward and two steps back. But on the whole, I think some of the statistics that your reporter outlined are very positive. Immunizing 85% of Iraqi children, sending them for a full year of school, having 500,000 new cell phone subscribers in Iraq, all of these are signs of genuine progress. The security situation needs to be improved, and I think we have to admit that we have a problem. We need to combat it, and we're going to make progress toward that as the Iraqi sovereign authority takes more and more control.
So right off, you get a clear picture of how they were trying to spin things back in the day. And it's kind of sick because all she's basically using are, in part, numbers that can't even be confirmed and in many ways are irrelevant on the big picture. This whole thing about, 80,000 kids being immunized. I mean, what real difference does that make when you're spreading depleted uranium all throughout the atmosphere? When you're going around bombing whole cities and its major arenas of electrical power, which has caused incredible forms of sewer backups, water contamination. So kids are basically drinking, along with everyone else, polluted water, giving them consistent diarrhea, and which is one of the leading ways of expiring out of this earth. You get diarrhea in these types of region, chronic diarrhea, and you'll waste away in no time. Yet this fool gets up here and throws these things out. You know, we're immunizing kids. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then she goes, and as if you should get caught up in some kind of market mindset. Well, there's 500,000 cell phones have been, are in use. You know, many of those cell phones are probably used by the Iraqi insurgents to detonate their bombs. That's what they were probably buying them for. So this whole bit about things progressing in some kind of positive light, you could see in part how the empire was able to lasso itself deeper and deeper into this calamity that it finds itself in, because it's so built upon myth making. It's not even a halfway rational enterprise and a corporate servant community. They're so obsessed with parroting the lines of what their masters in the Pentagon say with the least critical eye possible that even the type of analysis that would have helped for their point of view. See, I'm glad things went haywire, but from their point of view, just having more of a critical eye on certain things that could have possibly helped them shore up some of these obvious problems that were about to implode on them were covered up because they were so busy covering up their own eyes.
Absolutely correct. You know, the sad truth is they actually began to believe some of their own lies. Now, that's where it gets rather frightening. I mean, it's one thing to be lying, you know, but they started talking this foolishness. They've had these programs, Trace, for our listeners out there. I hope that you are aware of this on both types of networks. I think on the Dish Network, which I have, you get Free Speech TV and you also get Link TV. And both of those do some very interesting programming about this particular subject. So they've had this thing where I saw the soldiers talking about how they were, when they first got there, people were applauding them. And they were happy because they had brought down Saddam and they tore down this, and da 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 da. And people in Iraq, I think, may have had some illusions about the United States getting rid of Iraq, shooting them or something, and then they move on with their lives and they go on and rebuild their country. Well, nothing of that sort has actually occurred. But it is interesting and a little frightening and how childish and naive it is that people really didn't think that, well, at least they were projecting this image about saving Iraq from the dictator and all of this madness, and they started to believe it, some of them.
Well, kind of, in my opinion, what ends up happening after a while is that, you know, most self-respecting reporters, even if they have certain reservations about, you know, the corporate media system and all of that, in the past, there was a little room, you know, like in the Vietnam days, for those who had reservations about what the government was doing, but still believe they can work with inside. There was room for them to be somewhat objective on certain matters, you know, to release certain things, to, you know, report on and expose the facts that the government or military really didn't want you to. But, you know, they've hammered down on that type of rational objectivity in a ferocious way, to the point where you basically have many droned out yes men and stuff. So when you see stuff like people like Gary Webb, who ended up having his story about the crack CIA inner city connection validated by the CIA's own report, but the drumbeat from the corporate media that had drummed him out of his position kept drumming away even after the CIA's own report validated it. So basically, you're not going to get no one but gumps after a certain amount of time who aren't even coming at journalism from some kind of, you know,
professional,
rational,
serious,
scientific, you know, there is no type of room for an Upton St. Clair to write some kind of journalistic expose in the corporate media papers, you know, the way that had historically been in the past. Now, you can have cats who can write things in their own books and be released and mainly found in independent bookstores like Eric Schlosser's book, Fast Food Nation, which is, you know, becoming a classic in its own particular right. But Eric Schlosser could not have done like an 8-part series on the fast food chain and the meat industry nowadays and have it go through like the New York Times. They don't tolerate that stuff.
No way.
Get your ass out.
Because life's a box of chocolates, baby.
Right. So next, Lou Dobbs outlines some skepticism over and around Sam's turnover of power to the Iraqi interim government. Now, of course, this conversation is within the spectrum of the U.S. empire's worldview. So let's check it out. Dig this.
Christopher, as Danielle has pointed out, significant progress. The fact is that the interim Iraqi government is in charge. Why don't you see this as a very positive moment and a step for the U.S. mission?
Well, first of all, I'm very glad the handover of sovereignty took place, and I think it's a very important symbol that the U.S. does not intend to dictate forever the terms of the Iraqi government, how they're going to govern themselves. Unfortunately, the mere presence of 140,000 and more U.S. troops in Iraq really undermines the legitimacy of the democratic government there. And ultimately, as to the question of success or failure in Iraq, I think in the very near term, we have to measure our success or failure by whether or not the intervention has made us safer from terrorism, and I think there the answer is clearly no.
Chris, help me with something, because I'm kind of struggling with this. There would be no democracy to discuss if it weren't for the presence of those troops who liberated Iraq and deposed Saddam Hussein. How can their presence be a delegitimizing force?
Because first and foremost, the democratic government of Iraq must represent the will of the people of Iraq. And in order for that to happen, they have to be seen as not dependent upon a foreign power for their survival, which the current government is. They need to be seen as representing the legitimate will of the Iraqi people. And while many Iraqis are very glad that Saddam Hussein is gone, many also wish the occupation to end because they really are very humiliated by this occupation, and they really want the government there to take responsibility for affairs, not just in political matters and in infrastructure and education and whatnot, but also in security.
Now, as you see how they twisted this whole thing up, you know, the guy starts off that, you know, it's a good symbol that Sam has turned over power to these interim government, and that's all it is, symbolic. But he goes on to say that that they can't be there forever. Well, first of all, Sam, whether he had goals of having his boots there forever, and obviously on a certain level he did, because he's building bases there. So he plans to have another outpost, actually a couple of major bases in Iraq that he's building right now. And he was building them back when this clown was on. So they're into this whole imagery thing. They're the ones into symbols. That if Bremer and all those guys have their little proceedings of putting forth these knuckleheads as quote-unquote being the interim government, that's symbolic of a transition taking place. In the same way that liberals believe that if some raggedy Democrat is elected as president, that that's supposed to symbolize some kind of transition from a more authoritarian type of quote-unquote regime, without putting it into the whole class perspective. These guys are playing into it just on an imperial level. So then Dobbs turns around and says that, well, first of all, there would be no democracy in Iraq if the troops weren't there to install it in the first place. As if democracy is anywhere near being around the corner. And as if they had any other aspirations between other than the classical imperial slash occupational regime, you know, the whole colonial settler type of enterprise and stuff. See, this is classic imperial networking and corporate media networking within the spectrum of the imperial framework, to not really challenge the legitimacy of a foreign country violating international laws and occupying someone else's land and massacring loads of people in the process based off of false claims of weapons of mass destruction and links to so-called terrorists. Meanwhile, the people that you're claiming that the Iraqi government and Saddam Hussein had links to were a creation of your own covert operating enterprise through the CIA and the Pakistanis ISI. I mean, this is this Orwellian to the 12th degree, with no shame, no hint of irony whatsoever. Once again, this helps expose the fact that what this does come down to is this whipping that ass. It comes down to power. These guys will hocus pocus you to the end of time if you let them. They'll smoke and mirrors it on and on. This clown had the nerve to say, well, the Iraqi people, while they are glad to see Saddam go, their problem now is that they're humiliated by the intervention. They're starving. Their kids are dying. They're angry because the school systems have been collapsed and they see no future in sight. And who represents, honestly, that problem? Sam.
For one person. That's it. That's why traditionally the slogan of any nation or country that was attacked and occupied by a colonial power or an imperial power has always been, kill the invaders. That's it. It's that simple. It bothered me deeply that my fellow Americans didn't seem to understand which role they were playing in this, though. And that's where their propaganda, that's why we try to break that propaganda down for you folks. Get you to think about it twice and talk to your friends and your family and your co-workers about these matters, because we're not quite there. A lot, now I know there's a lot of apathy and a lot of Americans don't give a damn. But a lot of us have actually been confused into thinking that we're helping them people over there. And it's tragic. We can't help them. And I want to tell you something else. Not only can the Iraqi people only help themselves, I want to say this, there's only one road for them to help themselves. And it's not the road of bourgeois democracy. I'm sorry. It will not work. Neo-colonialism. New colonialism. Where you have a a dark-skinned face in a high place has already been used until now it no longer in any way can fool the masses of people. No, it is not the continuation of capitalism that's going to lead to the freedom of the Iraqi masses, but the destruction of capitalism for once and for all. And when that occurs, all of the national needs of the Iraqi people, the need to set up a democratically organized system, everybody wants that. The need to run their own affairs, their own autonomy, their national autonomy. The need to be able to regulate their own industry without outside interference, but only with cooperative efforts. This can only happen when the working people of Iraq take the future of Iraq in their hands and a socialist federation of the Middle East is set up. No, you can't have socialism in one country, folks. It's going to take several of these nations banding together to set up something that will work. But you want to know something? The people of the Middle East are getting there real fast. If we can win them away from that Islamic fanaticism.
Next, Chris, one of the guests, outlines her true meaning of security for the Iraqi people. Check it out.
Can I chime in for a second? I agree fully that an occupation is not what the Iraqi people want. I don't think it's what the American military or the American people want either. We need to stay there as long as we need to for security and to aid the Iraqi government. But at the end of the day, I have to ask myself if the presence of 37,000 American troops in South Korea undermines the democracy of the South Korean government. The presence of tens of thousands of troops in Germany undermines the democracy of the German government. I think that the people of those countries, just as the people of Iraq, understand what the purpose is of the American mission. It's not to dictate politics. It's not to control the government. It's to help secure the nation from enemies within and without.
I think many Americans, if I may, Lou, I think many Americans expect the U.S. military to be first and foremost concerned with our threat. And there are very serious threats facing us today. Not a single of the 9/11 hijackers was Iraqi. Not a single Al-Qaeda attack has been attributed to an Iraqi citizen. Our security was made very clear, and our insecurity was made very clear on September 11th. That's where our forces should be focusing their efforts.
Once again, it's classic doublespeak. You heard this woman, Chris, talk about how the American military and the American people don't want occupation, but they need to stay there as long as possible to ensure security. Security for who? It's Halliburton. That's who they're there for. Kentucky Fried Chicken. All these little corporate criminals. Because it damn sure is not for the security of the people. They're the ones getting bombed. They don't have a say in their own destiny outside of the rifle that they pick up to forge into lead their freedom, which is outside of the sphere and spectrum of what people like her and her ruling class masters consider security and their proper role in destiny. So this is this classic double speaking. Then she spins it off like, do the troops in South Korea somehow undermine the security? Do American troops in Germany undermine Germany's security? Actually, they do. The U.S. imperial troops and boots all over the world has served and are there to serve the interests of the imperial class. Whether it's in Puerto Rico, they're not shooting off things in Puerto Rico and poisoning the landscape. You know, and had been like in Vegas for the health of the Puerto Rican people. They weren't setting off atomic bombs near and around Hawaii, poisoning their environment and people for the sake of the dolphins in the region. They were there for their own geo-global political expansionist policies. Everywhere Sam has his boots, is there for his own particular interest and goals. And that has a privatized financial capital backing market system, a desire behind it. So, when she pretends like a classic defender of ruling class politics that Sam is not there to dictate the politics to the Iraqi people or to the interim government. Well, who else is calling the shots? Just a few weeks ago when we had on the clown who was a so-called, you know, some little American clown who was some so-called international trainee of judges and lawyers.
Yeah,
everything he was doing and saying was backing the legitimacy of who was appointed and how they got to be appointed by the U.S. administration and how they were going to try people that the U.S. government and its military had arrested, like Saddam. It wasn't the people who were deciding the fate of Saddam. It was those people brought within the sphere, and it was dictated by the policies and actions of those people within the sphere and collaborators of the U.S. government.
Right.
So this is this hocus pocus talk.
Let's think logically, brothers and sisters. Let's listen again in our minds at what we were just offered by this young woman. Let's think logically. She said the U.S. troops have to stay because they're going to aid the Iraqi government with its security. Something to that effect, right? Well, wait a minute. Who set up, manufactured, created this Iraqi government? Remember Chalabi? Look, y'all want to know something? They have been working on this for years. They had kept these Uncle Tom Iraqis in the United States. They had something they called the Iraqi National Congress in exile, you see. Funded, paid for by the United States, and they kept them going, and they was having all their little meetings and stuff. So when they finally got their chance, and it wasn't much of a chance, when they decided, let me say this, when the government decided to attack Iraq, they had old Uncle Tom compradors in their back pocket ready to walk into Iraq and install them. They have been doing it for years. Now, on this question of, now this is another silly thing, but I think it needs to be mentioned. It needs to be dealt with. When she says, well, did the U.S. troops, enforce the security of the U.S. in Germany, in Japan? Because there were U.S. troops were in both of those countries. Remember, when they lost World War II, the United States occupied East Germany and Japan. In fact, they still have troops in Japan. Well, here's a fact, you know, that people are, of course those troops intimidate. Those troops intimidate the workers in those countries. What if there were a massive general strike in those countries? What do you think the role of the U.S. troops might be? And if that were to mobilize into an actual socialist insurrection, do you have any doubt that those troops would not be neutral? Let's be logical. Let's think about tomorrow.
Now, next up, Lou Dobbs talks about the then 800 U.S. G.I. Joes who had been bumped off. And was it at this time worth it? Now, remember, this was back when, quote-unquote, back in the day when things had not reached the crisis point that it has now. So let's see what they were still optimistically trying to spew out. Check it out.
Danielle, the loss of more than 800 American lives, more than 5,000 wounded, we're going to spend tens and hundreds of billions of dollars in Iraq. For what has been accomplished, is it, in your judgment, worth it? Is it an experience that you think Americans would like to repeat?
I don't think that war is an experience that any American, or indeed anybody in the world, would like to repeat, but sometimes war is necessary. World War II was a necessary war, and we fought many other necessary wars. Saddam Hussein was a threat to his own people, to his neighbors, and I believe ultimately to us. The question that faced us was, did we want to leave the trigger in his hand, or did we want to deal with it? Did we want to deal with Saddam at a time of his choosing or at a time of our choosing? I think after September 11th, the choice was fairly obvious to a president who had to be committed to protecting our national security. Saddam Hussein was an evil man. One could never, should never say that we want to go back to having someone like that in power.
Of course, Osama bin Laden is an evil man with a direct connection to the murder of 3,000 lives in this country. Do you see, in fact, a greater direct connection to that evil than to Saddam Hussein?
It is possible that there are two great evils in the world, and Osama bin Laden is one. There are some who assert that the war in Iraq has distracted from the war on terror. I would point out that in the years since 9/11, we have arrested the mastermind of 9/11, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. We have arrested Ramzi bin al-Shib, nominally one of the 20 hijackers. We have taken down many, many important al-Qaeda operatives in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and elsewhere. And so I think that in and of itself is proof positive that the war against al-Qaeda is going forward. I would further point out that there has not been another attack on U.S. territory. I don't think we should ignore that.
There hasn't been any other... That's basically because Sam hasn't organized another attack on U.S. soil yet. This whole rhetoric about how we had to deal with Saddam on our choosing, not his, and after 9/11, we couldn't wait. In other words, take the initiative. As if Saddam wasn't contained through the imperial grip. See, this is what I mean. These clowns, the only thing that is shaking them off of some of this rhetoric and caused some of the infighting that you're starting to see now, you know, like with Rumsdeld, them, you know, starting to chew him up and all of that, has nothing to do with reasoning. It has nothing to do with looking humanely at the Iraqi situation or the people in Iraq. As a matter of fact, they cheerleaded on when Sam went on that brutal defensive bloodlust in Fallujah. What has shaken them off of some of the rhetoric in this more current time, even though they're still saying stay the course, but not as belligerently, is the fact that they're getting that ass shot off. And now many people within those ruling circles are starting to have doubts about which way forward. So just like rats in a hot frying pan, you got some who are jumping off, similar to what happened in Vietnam. It wasn't the fact that all of a sudden they recognized the humanity of the sisters and brothers in Vietnam. They had slaughtered millions. It's just the fact that they saw no light at the end of the tunnel except the light blast of some Vietnamese sister or brother blowing off one of their heads. That's what brought them into reason. This whole spin doctoring game about Saddam was a threat to his own people and all of that, and how they at the time were arresting all of these top al-Qaeda people and stuff. You don't even really see them talk that smack nowadays. That's what I mean by what a difference a year makes. Now, because it's so clear that while they are playing this little cynical game, you remember when they had all these little playing cards, you can go into like 7-Eleven and all of that, and they were selling playing deck cards with the name and faces of all these Iraqi people on, and you know, like Saddam and other people like that, like it was all a big joke. But now it's clear that it's the core is just insurgents leading the charge, and they really don't have a good clue on who these top insurgents in their particular cells are. All they know is that day after day, some insurgents or a group of insurgents is going to be attacking that ass, and they're going to be shipping off some heads that have been blown off his body of U.S. G.I. Joes, and that we'll then get another order of head coffins to toss those little G.I. Joes' heads in. So she can talk all of this, the great evil of the world is Saddam, and Osama is the second great evil, smack all they want. But at the end of the day, the evilness and the contradictions are being exposed by the fact that this is one thing that they can't talk their way out of.
No.
Insurgents on the move.
That's it. In a nutshell. I could, wow. You're getting kind of rough to follow here, buddy. Look at here. Fact that, you know, when she said Saddam was a threat to his own people. Well, anyone that reads extensively could probably quote dozens of articles about Saddam Hussein's henchmen torturing, murdering, and basically suppressing the rights of other Iraqis. There's no doubt that they're, Saddam Hussein was a pretty rough customer, right? Or maybe, you know, I don't know all of the ins and outs.
But that's why they backed him for a while.
That's right.
Yeah. He was a ruthless customer.
But see, that's the whole point, Trace, is because that's not the job for Americans to be concerned with so much. That's the job of the Iraqi people to decide what they're going to do, how they're going to deal with their various leaders. Who's got to go? What kind of government they want? What kind of system they gonna want? But when you look around the world, the nerve of these people, if they bumped off every murderous, psychotic dictator in the world, every militarist that had his foot on the neck of the people in the world, my goodness, we'd have to expand our head coffin industry.
Yeah, there'd be no U.S. officials. Ashcroft, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice.
The nerve! They can only get away with this rhetoric in a country in which the people are demoralized, confused, not organized, and have no real handle on what's going on. Let's talk to our folks, man. Let's bring our folks along with the slave revolt.
Next, the two guests debate, quote unquote, on the issue of is the Iraq campaign a distraction from the war on terrorism? So let's see how they handle it. Check it out.
Lou, I am very happy there has not been another attack, as most Americans, many Americans are, but unfortunately,
all
Americans are. Unfortunately, it is not true that our war on Iraq was not a distraction against Al-Qaeda. It was a distraction. Al-Qaeda was operating and is still operating in Afghanistan. And it was a necessary war. I'm glad that Danielle used that term. It was a necessary war to go into Afghanistan to fight the Taliban and depose them and also disrupt Al-Qaeda. But it was a distraction to go into Iraq, and it remains a distraction as long as we have a sizable military presence there.
I guess the question that I would have for Chris, and I can't turn to him even though he's next to me, is what's the evidence that we have been distracted? What is the evidence that the war on Al-Qaeda isn't going well?
The compelling evidence, Danielle, is that Osama bin Laden remains at large. Al-Qaeda continues to grow.
Al-Qaeda
but also,
will continue
what is
to be a threat against
this,
the United
me,
States
Danielle,
when Osama bin Laden is gone.
Please. Excuse me. And please. The evidence to the contrary, obviously, is that 25 million Iraqis have the opportunity to debate what kind of democracy, what kind of government, if not democracy, that they would like. So it's an important question. We thank you both for being here to present your views. Opposed to the
Labour. Thank you. Thank you.
Christopher, thank you.
This shows you how sick this is. You know, the first clown starts it off saying, this Daniel guy, that the war on terrorism, that the war in Afghanistan was the correct war in the concept and construct of the war on terrorism. But the war in Iraq is a distraction. When in reality, the whole concept of the war on terrorism is nothing but a ruling class distraction and a way for the ruling class to turn basically whole segments of the working class on other segments of working class throughout the world and polarize themselves and basically bludgeon themselves to little pieces so that they can gain access to more and more power and resources throughout the world. Now, if that's not classic distraction, in the whole sphere of, you know, the war on drugs, which is just another form of it, et cetera, et cetera, then I don't know what is. But he says that the Afghan war, as like I said, was necessary. Necessary. But then he's supposed to be the opposition because he's against the quote-unquote war in Iraq. Then when Dobbs tries to say, well, you know, the reason why many people say that it may be a distraction is because Al-Qaeda is still growing. And then this woman, this Chris woman, jumps in and starts interrupting about how Al-Qaeda is getting smashed up, and she's smirking and laughing about it like it's all a big joke. I mean, this is how unserious these low lies really are. I mean, these are human lives being destroyed, being wasted away, completely unnecessary from the framework of human potential and what humans could be on this planet. But as long as we're caught within the dragon's cave of capitalist destruction, we'll forever have fire breathing on us, disintegrating us, until we, of course, slay that dragon.
Yes, indeed. And slay that dragon, we must. Because you see now, what's going to happen to us if we don't? It is getting... Tracy made an argument earlier that I think needs just a teeny bit of expansion. He was talking about how Gary Webb had exposed the crack cocaine hookup in the United States and showed how it exploded on the scene and the connection of the CIA to it. Subsequently, the CIA reports vindicated this. Still, they had to put him down. They continued to put him down till the poor man got depressed and took his own life.
Well, apparently.
Well, two bullet holes in the head make me wonder.
That should make you wonder.
but he's no longer with us right now. Gary, I'm sorry you can't tell us what's up. But anyway, the point I'm trying to, they certainly did. Well, look, they killed him before he was dead by keeping him from doing what he really wanted to do. You know, that's another way of killing a person, killing them softly, so to speak. But you know what? That's because, you see, capitalism as a world system is in its death throes. This is how we get all of these bizarre contradictions before us. And we have to learn how to figure our way through it, find our way through it, because you know what? It's obvious. They have to demoralize and confuse the people before they tell them some foolishness about weapons of mass destruction. Do you know they actually had people in Iraq looking for weapons of mass destruction? For months! Had them out there actually looking. And don't you know that some of those people actually believed that they were going to find something? No, this is madness. But so, in this, I'm trying to find the right word for our listeners here. You know, you go through phases of life. Your youth, your infancy. And then you become an adult, then you go through your middle age, then you get old, but then you start to actually get senile and decrepit. Now that, I'm sorry, I'm not talking with mean-spiritedness towards our elderly. I'm elderly. I ain't talking about nobody as bad as I am, bad off as I am. But that's what happens. Well, that's the same thing happening to this system here. See, they got 1 foot in the grave, y'all. 1 foot in the grave. When they start talking silly like this. This kind of talk that they have here might have caused a demonstration years ago if people had heard this kind of stuff. They're on their last leg. Let's kick them on the good leg, y'all.
Now next, Protop Chowdhury explains how Sam's occupation / rebuilding efforts works in the real world. Check it out.
To the war zones, you know, heavily fortified, you know, guarded by American soldiers, or if they're outside of that, you know, they have private soldiers, you know, mercenaries who guard them. And what they've done is they've subcontracted to Iraqis to go ahead and fix these places up. But what's happened is, so for example, Bechtel gets $20,000 to fix a school. They probably pocket a large sum of that. They do pocket a large sum of that, and they hire an Iraqi to do the job. And what's happened in many cases, not in all cases, is people realizing, since there's very little oversight, they can get away with things, have gone in and done a very poor job. So to give you one example of a school we visited, there was they had a functioning system of fans that had been set up by UNICEF, that brand new Japanese fans donated by, you know, the United Nations. Along comes this contractor hired by Bechtel, and they want to make money. So they take all the brand new fans, which they can then sell, you know, on the market, and replace them with cheaper quality fans, return and say, report that they have, you know, repaired a broken system. And so there's a number of things. People come in, you know, they install new, we saw new, you know, power pumps for water and sewage systems that, you know, didn't work. So they built these systems. They don't work. In some cases, the drainage system, you saw this shiny new sort of drain cover, and when you lift it up, there's no drain underneath it. So the schools are very frustrated because they realize that what's happened here is that somebody, in fact, lots of people are pocketing the money, and what they've ended up with is, you know, a sort of very basic whitewash, quote-unquote reconstruction, but in fact, things don't work, and so they're very, very upset.
This shows you how cynical this whole process is. I mean, these clowns are caught up in their own greed and lust that at this point in stage of the game, they don't even want to go through the motions. They just want to just rip you out. Just scrape your bones, scrape your flesh off to the bones, and just leave you there and do it in front of people. Gobble you up. Look at the crowd that's watching you with blood all over their face, and then tell you that no, they're not a cannibal. I mean, that's how sick things have gotten for the capitalists. No shame, no pretense at all. This caught up in your own arrogance and this whole diabolical ruthlessness that at this point they don't even have the intellectual capacities anymore that they once did. You know, you just have capitalist pigs feeding at the trough where, you know, before they would have to put up a certain pretense of civility and all of that because, you know, they had other ideologies that were vibrant and, or somewhat vibrant, especially compared to what's going on today in many ways, that they had to compete with. So they had to have more of an, you know, intelligentsia that would follow through with some of their game plans and play it out a little bit more correctly. Now it's like the hell with it all, you know, and that's just exposes the situation that we're in and the danger that we're in when you have an empire with this many means of destroying the planet and the state of mind that this empire is in at this particular time.
No one believes. Look, as I had mentioned earlier, what Tracy just said, I want you to follow through with this, and then I think you can understand more clearly where we'd be trying to come from here. So, this company, Halliburton, whoever, pays some local yokel to put in a sewer, and he drops a cover over and walks away. Look, when capitalism, there was a time, when that's what we mean when we say that capitalism has outlived its usefulness. There was a time when it was very important to the capitalists that they did good work. Why? Why? Because they had to compete. There were many, 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 many small capitalists out there all fighting, doing the same work. So if somebody's employee did some foolishness like that, it's a scandal. He's finished. He can never work in that field again. He go broke. Well, what's changed? Capitalism today is no longer a competitive system of small entrepreneurs, even though people like to have these silly daydreams about it. But in reality, it's a monopoly. Halliburton does not have to compete. There is nobody to replace them. They're in. Because their boy is in the White House. And it's that simple. It don't matter what the hell they do, what the quality of the work is, what gets done. There's no schedule to complete anything. There's no competitive bidding. This is a system that has outlived its usefulness. Look towards your socialist future.
Now next, Protop shows how the greed of the U.S. corporations helped set up the defection of Iraqis from the army that they themselves were setting up for the Iraqis to help implement in their next stage of goals. Check this out.
The impact it's had is, for example, there's this company called Vinel, who was hired to train the new Iraqi army. At the end of the day, because soldiers were getting so little money, of the 1,000 people that they trained, 50% roughly left, deserted that army. I'm not sure if they deserted with their weapons or not, but partly it's the sheer greed of these companies coming in, who pay themselves very well. Just literally the pay in the case of Vinel was $60 a month. By contrast, an American mercenary, someone who used to work for, the Delta Force that comes in, will be paid $500 a day. And so they will spend as much as $250,000 a year on hiring, a mercenary from Europe or North America. But they won't pay the foot soldiers who actually have the most dangerous jobs. They're right out front. When you heard about this latest bombing, with the one about 2 weeks ago outside at Assassin's Gate, a place that I visited. This is a place where when you walk through, the first people you meet are Iraqis, and then 20 feet behind you meet, the Florida National Guard and various other soldiers. But they're protected by, many feet of barricades and concertina wire and barbed wire. So the people outside are the cannon fodder of the Iraqis.
So once again, as you heard Protop outline, the sheer greed of the U.S. corporations, they can't help but just ruthlessly exploit people wherever they see them. It's so deep embedded in their nature that they can't even control themselves, even though it undermines their own self-interest.
Exactly. Exactly.
So here, they have some Uncle Tom Iraqis who are coming, who are willing to help be the police guard, basically, for their imperialist endeavors. But they would only pay them $60 a month, even though they were engaged in the most dangerous job. Then they look over at some little yahoo from Kansas, some little Kansas cowboy come over, and he's talking about he's getting $500 a day. And the only difference is he's an Americano, and you're doing more dangerous work. So it's Lars Skorzen just took that gun and that $60 they got for that month, and just turned to the insurgents and said, fuck these Americans. I'm down with you guys. That's what ended up happening. And now, this was a while back when this stuff was really going on strong. Now, this helped create the insurgent resistance that these capitalists now see themselves emblazed in. There is no shame. No shame at all with these bandits. And yes, what a difference a year makes.
Why do they hate us so? One has to wonder. One has to wonder. That's the way imperialism works, you see. And that $60, that's called super exploitation. And by the way, Trace, guess what? That's good money in the third world. I hate to say it. They got people down to $2 a day. So $60, but it ain't worth your life, is it now?
Or your family's life. Because, see, this type of insurgence, when people are shooting up and blowing up all the time, this is not like, running to some little shoe factory and getting some little dead-end job like that for $60 a month. That's what it was, $60 a month. So it's not like that. What?
That's crazy.
I know. So at least in the little shoe factory, at the end of the day, while you're exploited for that 16 to 18 hours, et cetera, you still may have a head on your shoulders. But doing that for $2 a day in Iraq, to come home with no head, you know, and your wife looking at you, you know, and all that's left is, you know, a shoulder and a foot. You know, that just don't seem to be worth it.
Shows how desperate people are, too.
Well, of course, but they exploited that to the till. In other words, unfortunately, with the way in Iraq, where they basically paid the cats, let's say, $400 a month, they probably wouldn't have had nearly the defection. And that's not nearly as much as they were paying the little G.I. Joe or the little American heroes, who they were basically paying $500 and up a day. But like I said, the greed, they couldn't control themselves. And now, well, there's something that's really out of control, you know. But next up, let's check out how this situation in Iraq with Harold Knoll. He's a former G.I. Joe in Iraq from America. You know, went off to, you know, quote unquote, play his role in Sam's Imperial War, only to find out that when he got back from the killing fields in Iraq, there was no home for him to lay his head in. Check this out, see what I mean.
When I came back, it was rough. When I came back, I stayed in Army. Because they extended me 6 months. What happened? They extended me 6 months. I stayed, tried to stay in Georgia for a while to see if I could make it. Because I was told the war in Iraq, I mean, living in New York was going to be rough. So I came to New York because I didn't have no means of transportation in Georgia. I didn't have no way to go off to work. So I came to New York to see, you know, that's where I was born and raised. So I just said, let me come back to New York to see if I can find a job, because where I stayed in Georgia was a military town. You understand? Everybody's, you know what I'm saying? You're in the military, so nobody's going to look down on you. So I was thinking, well, let me come to New York where I can get away from this military stuff and get on my feet. But that's not the way it ended. I ended up on the street and nowhere to go.
So what basically happened was, and this is somewhat scandalous, when he was over there in Iraq, quote unquote, fighting the good fight, you know, for God and country, somehow the U.S. military decided that he was AWOL. Now, when Boy George truly went AWOL, they basically let him slide by with a coke pipe in his hand. But when this cat is actually over there killing in the name of the empire, they somehow think he's gone AWOL, so they stop paying him money, which was going to his family. So for, you know, all the months he was gone, his wife and kids aren't getting any kind of paycheck. So they lose the house. So he comes back to find out that his own family is in the chaos that he helped the empire put the Iraqi people in. And just like the Iraqi people, he looked over to Sam and found that Sam said basically, "Boy, you did what you needed for us. You disposable." What a difference a year makes. One day he goes off, gets all of his pats on the back by the rulers, by these flag wavers. A year later, he's disposable. Kicked to the curb. Living in shelters. Separated and broken off from his family. And like the Iraqi people, who basically are from the same class he is, no true future in sight. Unless maybe he picks back up that gun and this time starts shooting at home, at the real enemy.
Yeah, this tragedy actually once again demonstrates how this system is through. They didn't shout they why, they through. Because if you live long enough, and I consider myself fortunate to have lived long enough to see the results of veterans returning from different serious conflicts like Korea, then
Vietnam,
now
Iraq.
And, you know, when people went off to Vietnam, yeah, they came back. Yeah, there's people that had it pretty tough. But generally speaking, man with a house, oh no. They didn't hook him up. They didn't hook something up for him. It wasn't going to do nobody like that. You just came off the battlefield, go right home, and bam, you are, oh no. Oh no. Not my America. And look now. Look now. And that is why they are not even going to be able to really win over the commitment, the long-term commitment of their own soldiers. So when we start to go to them and say, you know what, we think you're right about that jacket that you didn't get, and they sent you out there without, and that armor that's supposed to be on that, you're absolutely right. And you know something else? We don't think this is right. And we start to give them our general critique, we're going to find some open ears amongst these soldiers. And yes, the American Civil War will finally be brought to its successful end. Because we never finished that one we had in 1865. We stopped a little bit too soon. But we're going to finish it this time. And the way it starts off to be finished is by those in the armed services becoming conscious as human beings of their exploitation and turn those guns around.
Hold on a sec.
About it, or President Bush's support going way through the roof, up almost over the ceiling. But as time goes by, you know, things settle down, and President Bush's approval rating goes down, for instance. But yeah, we will rally around the troops for sure.
I don't know. I don't think all of us will, Doctor. With all due respect, I think you're going to have 25% of Americans who don't like the country anyway, who think it's an evil country, who think we brought this upon ourselves. All of this crazy kind of fringe opinion. But I think you're going to have that kind of forum out there. And I'll tell you what, it's my right as an American and as a news analyst to call those people bad Americans. Bad Americans. You're a bad baseball player, okay? You're a bad actor. You're a bad American. Would I be doing something wrong?
Okay.
My New Year's resolution. As the hour and minute hand ticks closer to midnight, signifying the start of the new year and the end of the old year, it may also signify, like an hourglass drained of its last substance of life, the life force for humans' continued existence on this planet. For if year 2004 is any indication where humankind are leaving this planet, it's clear that the planet is not big enough for both entities. For what we saw in 2004 is a planet that may not be toxic free enough for edible cows, as it appears that Mad Cow USA came back for a second curtain call this year. Unfortunately, with the all-powerful privatized meat industry lobbying machine and the compliant corporate media network, this meat-infected time bomb, blood-drinking, manure-eating, incarcerated animal in this prison farm industrial complex will have to come back stronger for a return performance in the near future, possibly coming to a town, or should I say plate, near you. Just remember, if you eat this mad cow for your third strike, you may truly be out. But it appears that there will be no three strikes and you're out for Black or his and her Latin cellmates in California. In other words, your poor ass will still be incarcerated, that is, as Governor Arnold roided out Schwarzenegger and Jerry Stonewall Jackson Southern strategist Brown, the sloppy degenerate mayor of Oakland, flashed out from their hats not only their lynch ropes, but some Negro criminal postcard images to scare God-fearing white folks from reforming by vote the three strikes law. But it appears there's no three strikes and you're out for the right type of people like Bernard Kurak, Rudolph Gould of Iani's sidekick. As the exposed criminal cop, I know that's a contradiction in words, wife cheater with ties to the mafia, has made millions of dollars in his anti-human behavior and career. A criminal career and behavior that would have a petty street hustler behind bars forever and condemned for their street thug enterprise. As a matter of fact, where is the condemnation from jigaboos like Shelby Steele or Bill Cosby when these Anglo penthouse hustlers get caught stealing money with their mob friends from hard, decent working class people? But then again, when a buffoonish president of America, Boy George, can start an illegal and immoral genocidal war and receive Time Magazine's Man of the Year award, it appears anything is possible with the magic of a gumpified population. But that's not the only magical, and in this case, tragic story that happened this past year. As courageous crack cocaine CIA inner city story breaking journalist Gary Webb committed suicide by shooting himself magically twice in the head. If there was no Zapruder film or Lee Harvey Fall Guy Oswald, the rulers would have probably claimed that John F. Kennedy shot himself with a rifle three times in the head. But not to be out magically performed, at least five of the skyjackers the Pentagon said were on the 9/11 planes that crashed into buildings in the American landscape are still magically walking around alive. Yet if one wants to see and feel a real trick the capitalists are playing on Earth, one should take a trip down to the Antarctic and see the glaciers melt away right in front of your eyes from global warming. Even though we can't call it that, right? Soon the Antarctic, at this rate, will look like the Mojave Desert and will be in the real, and will truly be the real Atlantis. I also heard it appears that colon cancer Powell is temporarily at least hanging up his tap dance shoes and minstrel routine and is off to find the missing Atlantis, where he now claims that's where Saddam secretly stored the weapons of mass destruction. An issue he said tarnished his name and reputation. Powell said in the time between his TV appearances as Secretary of State before the UN and finding the weapons of mass destruction in Atlantis, you can just watch reruns of the Amos and Andy show and Clarence Thomas hearing cases at the Supreme Court justice. But it's clear that there will be no reprieve or any form of justice for consumer-eating fish like tuna or swordfish, all of whom have been reduced to 10% of their one-time population, a 90% obliterated population in where the remaining 10% stock has so much mercury in it you think the fish were from that planet, a planet that many people are starting to think Condoleezza Rice is from, since recently the Negrette referred to Boy George as, quote, my husband, unquote. Wow. Mass is in the hen house, or should I say, outhouse again. Yet, it's apparent that the liberal, progressive, pacifists, let's just call them like they really are, Democrats, are in the outhouse slash nut house again, as these electoral jihadists try to get their administrator for the ruling class, Kerry, to step into some Birkenstocks to bomb up Iraq instead of allowing Bush to do it in his cowboy boots. After all, Bush killed an animal to make those boots. But those weren't the only boots at work, as many Iraqi prisoners found themselves under the Nazi boots of the American G.I. Joe soldiers and CIA terrorists at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. But that wasn't the only macabre scene we witnessed, as loads of men and women cheered gleefully like a bloodthirsty lynch mob on the decision by the jury to put Scott Peterson to death. A death watch that's matched only by Randolph Ward's attempts this past year to put to death public schools in Oakland at all costs. Why is Ward still alive? Yet the life of America's population seems to be of little concern to the pharmaceutical industry, as this past year we saw the FDA and the U.S. government, along with their buddies in the pharmaceutical industry, allow killer drugs like Celebrex and Vioxx hit the shelves in America, loaded with products that will hit your heart like a jackhammer. Yet there will be no reparations for these victims. That's been preserved for U.S. corporations like Kentucky Fried Chicken, whose food chains in Iraq are losing business, i.e. profit, because their U.S. government is bombing the people who used to eat at those dumps. And speaking of dumps, guess who made a comeback from the dumps? Lowlife Rush Limbaugh, who after years of attacking people on drugs, had to admit he was a law-breaking druggie. But not to be out-drugged, kids in Harlem, all the way up to Africa, are immorally being fed lethal HIV drugs that are destroying their immune system. But that should not be too shocking, as it is the same economic system that's fading hip-hop out of its true experience, its roots, to a thug bling bling minstrel act that secures and assures the fantasies and stereotypes of the mainstream population, which is now the dominant purchaser of this once vibrant music. But as the Samites are depleting hip-hop of its soul, They are also depleting the soil and future of the Iraqi people with depleted uranium. But what's also obviously depleted of a complete goal are the Iraqis insurgents, who when they captured some French people, they threatened to cut off their heads unless the French government allowed female Muslims to wear their hijab scarves while at school. Meanwhile, Muslim women in Iraq, under more and more stress and poverty, with no organized agenda or program to belong to, are giving themselves up to prostitution to, of all people, the U.S. soldiers at an increasing rate in Iraq. Hey, Iraqi insurgents, liberating your people is more than kicking the imperialists out. It's helping to build a future, a humanist future, for all of one's people. But this chauvinistic mentality should come as no surprise, because as black people in Haiti are slaughtered by the U.S. regime, most Americans blinded by the Haitians' blackness don't blink an eye. As tens of thousands of black folks in Darfur are identity cleansed away by an identity politics playing terrorist Islamic Zionist government in Saddam, most Islams don't blink an eye. As 3 million plus Congolese sisters and brothers are evaporated, the diamond merchants and their governmental mineral stealing sidekicks don't blink an eye. Well, it's clear that for our own salvation, we're going to have to close these knee-bending soul, land, energy, and water-stealing privatizers' eyes permanently. Now that's a slave revolt resolution, because we have nothing to lose but our existence and our planet. This has been Tracy James with a commentary. My New Year's resolution. Out. Just about gonna wrap it up with Slave tonight. As 2004 is winding down to its final hours, it's time for us to not only say what the hell is going on, but to send these capitalists and collaborators throughout the world to their hell. Because as long as they're in existence, they're making a hell on Earth. Prepare for the slave revolt. Until the next time, slave revolt.